how to behave yourself in the household of God, which is the pillar and the ground of truth. Now tonight, we're at 3 and verse 1 is where we are. And we're going to talk about qualifications of pastors. And deacons. Qualifications of pastors and deacons. Pastors and deacons, I believe, are called of God. I know pastors are called of God. That's a calling. Many times today, people, churches, do not call pastors. All biblical Baptists at one time, churches called their pastors. Many times in histories, pastors have been called by mothers, by fathers, brothers, sisters, grandmas, and not of God. And many times you can tell the difference right off. When you're called of God, there is no retirement. You're just going to do it. You just do it. Preach the word. That's how people get saved. That's how people get converted. That's how people get grounded in the faith. 3 and 1. Pistos. Logos, atis episcopes, oregete, kalu, ergu, epitheme. Faithful the word. If anyone. Literally here, that is the first class conditional particle there, that A, isn't it? A, if, tis, anyone, interrogative pronominal adjective. If anyone, the word, the faithful, oversight. That word there means episcopos, that means epi is what? Page 153 and 54. That little analytical Greek lexicon. Little preposition, which means over or upon. And then how about scopos? Do you have a scope, Dave?
Yes.
Yeah, what do you do with a scope?
Look.
You look through it. Okay? The look over, then, what it means. The oversight. A pastor watches over a church. A pastor watches over a church. He desires for himself. Look at that word, orego. Orego. This word desire means to lust after, to some extent. It means to have a burning desire to do this. Third person singular. Present, indicative, and what voice is it? Middle voice. This is a call of God. Now, some preachers call themselves. They call themselves. That's what they want to do. I have known, I used to teach in the seminary. I have known many a young man surrender to the ministry as a preacher. And they go to school and they have visions of going out and pastoring a church and everybody waiting on them. And them being really high and very important people. And they get out there after a year or two and they realize, you know what? I'd rather be out there being a mechanic. It's easier. Because dealing with people is very hard. When you're dealing with their spiritual and emotional backgrounds and everything in their lives. It's not easy work. Sometimes they call themselves and they call themselves out. They're done with it. But if God calls you, forget it. It's done. It's over with. You're called. Not going to get out of it. That's it. The calling's there. The calling of God is what? Irrevocable. You can call yourself, but that's revocable. Your mama can call you, your daddy can call you, your daddy could call you, and that's revocable. Well, when God calls you and touches your soul with that calling, it's done and it's over with. I always tell a person when they come to me and talk to me, and they say, I think the Lord's called me to preach. And I say, well, get out of it if you possibly can. Run off if you possibly can. But I said, if you think he's really calling you, you're not going to run far enough. If you really have a call of God, it's finalized right now. It's done. He's calling you. He's calling you. He desires for himself a good kalo, a good work. A good work. And then he holds upon the mind. He holds upon the mind. Epi, theme. Epi, again, is upon, and then theme. El comes from mind. And he holds upon his mind a good work. This is good. Good work. All right. Three and verse two. Dei un ton episcopon. Ane pi lemb ton. Ene mias genekos andra ne phalion. Sophrona, Cosmion, Philozenon, Didasticon. Now these are the qualifications and the character of a pastor. The qualification and character of a pastor, and by the way, the same qualifications for a deacon. We on Sunday morning we talked about a deacon, the preaching deacon, didn't we? Stephen, the preaching deacon. He preached quite a message there in Acts the 7th chapter. Now, bishops or pastors are called of God, and I'm not so sure that deacons aren't also called of God. Churches call a person into the job of being a deacon, usually because they are already a deacon, they're already doing the job. Now it says here, day, third person singular, present, active, and personal. All right? It is bindingly necessary, therefore, the pastor, the oversight, the pastor, and then it says, ane pi lempton, ane pi lempton. It says nobody can hold on to you. That's what it means. He must be trustworthy. Reputable. The whole world looks at preachers, don't they? The whole world looks at them. And preacher's kids. How many of you, nobody here was a preacher's kid, were you? Well, you're lucky.
I was.
What?
I was.
You was a preacher's kid. All right. That's rough, isn't it?
I could go on and on.
Yes. Sometimes the churches almost destroy the preacher's kids. It's rough. Preacher's kids are beat up. They're like preachers. They are. And everybody beats up on them. Always got their eye on them, looking at them all the time. A PK, preacher's kid. I didn't know you were a preacher's kid.
I don't tell people.
You usually don't, huh? Be glad they don't know it, huh?
Yeah.
It was rough. Hard, hard. It is binding, therefore, necessary that the oversight be, it says, untouchable. You can't hold on to him. You can't hold anything to him bad. To be. And then it says one woman. One woman man. Now, historically, you have to go back and you have to realize this is talking about a pastor that was going to pastor one of God's churches back in the period of time when this letter was written. And when was the letter written? Remember when the letter was written? In the first century. All right. In the first century. Now, was it very common practice then for men to have more than one wife? That was not unusual. Okay? But a pastor should be a one-woman man. Churches don't want to support a pastor with three or four wives. I was in a place yesterday, and I walked in there, and here this Muslim man was with four wives and a whole bunch of kids at another table. They're all sitting there with the wives. A pastor should be a one-woman man. Now, the Bible, a lot of people today are Catholics in their practices. Many Baptists for the last 75 years have been Catholics in practice. Catholics don't have any allowance for divorce, did they? And in 1123 A.D., they called their priests to celibacy, which was right out of hell. They had trouble ever since then over that. It didn't start in the 20th century, the 18th century, the 19th century, the 17th century. It started out in 1123 A.D. when they started that hellish doctrine. And child molesting, seducing wives in the confessional and all that, it was a horrible, horrible practice for, well, all of those years, ever since then. What it's talking about here, and may make a lot of people in the world mad, but if you look at it and grammatically and historically, it talks about a man having one wife at a time. There are such things as scriptural divorces. Aren't there? Yes. We know that. Paul goes through that in Corinthians. Jesus went through it. In the time that we're talking about here, when Jesus spoke to the Jews, the rabbis and all of them about divorce, they were divorcing wives for any reason that they wanted to divorce them. And he said that's not the way God created it. Marriage was different. Paul also says that he will not call a woman or a man to be terrorized by a lost person in a marriage, or they were totally abused. He didn't call them to that. Didn't call them to terror. Can a man or a woman terrorize the other person in a marriage? That's what it's all about. Soap operas and everything else, isn't it? That's what it's all about. People terrorizing. Male terrorizing women. Women terrorizing men. That happens. There are as many abused men as there is abused women. Neither one of them is good. People get saved sometimes and just totally change around. But don't bet on it in a marriage. I've tried to talk. I've told women sometimes, forget it. Forget it. Forget it. A one-woman man. Nephalion. Nephalion. Cool-headed. Temperate. Sensible. Cool-headed. Temperate. And sensible. Sophrona. Cool-headed and sensible. Have a good mind. Sophrona. Have a good mind. Wise. Spiritually wise. Cosmion. What in the world does that mean, cosmion? Cindy, you know what cosmion means? That's right. Mm-hmm. His life must be in order. In order. Life must be in order. Not a well-ordered, a well-behaved in public. Godly order. Philoxenon. Philoxenon. What's that mean? Philoxenon. That means love. That means to love people, love strangers. Literally, what it means is to love strangers. Love strangers. That word, cosmion, the Latin word there is ornatus. 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 That means ornaments. Put it in order. His life should be an ornament of grace. basically. Didask tikon. Apt to teach, able to teach. A pastor must be able to teach, because that's what the word's all about, isn't it? Pastoring is preaching the word. Preach the word. 3 and verse 3. The characteristics of pastors. Me plectain. Ola epi ke. Amarkon. Athilar giron. Not a wino. Not a drunkard. That's what it's talking about. Not a wino and a drunkard. Have you ever known a wino? Yeah? You ever known an alcoholic? When they go to bed at nighttime, what are they thinking about? The last drink. What if when they wake up in the morning, what are they thinking about? The first drink. The next drink. That's all they think about. Where am I going to get the next drink? That's what their whole lives revolve around. Now, they're working alcoholics that really work for a job and have jobs, and they really work, but they're alcoholics. And the Alcoholics Anonymous, do you know that they have a whole group of Alcoholics Anonymous for a Catholic priest? How in the world that happened?
Well, they say wherever you find four Catholic priests, you'll find a fifth.
Yeah. They drank. But one of the great problems of this is in the what we call the Eucharist that they have, you know, that's one of the what we call conveyances of grace, the Lord's Supper. It's the Eucharist to them, the good grace. The priest is the only one that drinks wine. And it is wine. They did get that right. When you take the Lord's Supper, if you really wanted to be literally true, and I'm not saying you can't use Gamemotos Tason Blue, which is what? Grape juice, fruit of the vine. Because oinos is Gamemotos Tason Blue. Simple as that. But there have been Baptist churches tore all to pieces, whether they take wine or grape juice in the Lord's Supper. If you want to go back to what it is, go back to wine. It's wine. That's what it was. Simple as that. And did early Christians drink wine? All of them did. Every one of them. But it says here that he should not be an alcoholic. That's what it says. A pastor should not be an alcoholic. Didn't say he couldn't drink wine. He shouldn't be an alcoholic. People today, we've got this prohibition thing, you know, that went on in this country in the early 1900s and late 1800s. We had prohibition in America, you know, the 18th Amendment, I think it was. It was a mess, wasn't it? It was a real mess in this country. It caused more lawlessness than it did anything else. That's how all the big mafias and gangs got started, was through prohibition. But we sometimes go all the way to the right or all the way to the left, don't we? Don't use any common sense. I have had 30 or 40 people ask me in the last 5 years. We go through religious fads, don't we? You study church history, you see religious fads. I've had people coming in and they said, when Jesus turned that water into wine, he didn't turn it into wine, did he? What's the Bible say? He turned it into wine. Why knows? Well, it wouldn't get people drunk, would it? Yeah. He wouldn't get people drunk. How could he do a sinful thing like that? I said, you're not looking at the scriptures correctly. You're looking at them through your eyes in the 21st century now. Go back at that period of time. How good was water over there in the Middle East? Have you ever, Cindy, you been there? Yeah. You have to go over there and drink out of the river of Damascus?
You don't drink the water when you go.
Oh, you don't drink the water. You drink something else. I drank water in Damascus, Syria, and I thought I had a washing machine in my stomach. I almost died. Like, it killed me. I got over there to Jerusalem. Finally, Brother Cross came up to me. He said, Brother Jim, I know you're a teetotaler, but drink this bottle of wine. Drink it all right now. He said, you'll get better. Paul told Timothy to drink a little wine for his stomach's sake, didn't he? For dysentery reasons. It kills the bad bacteria. Jesus drank wine. Usually cut with water. They got wine skins, and they put them in wine skins, and the wine fermented and stretched the skin out, and it's leather. It said, don't put new wine in the old bottles. And it's all Ganemata Station Blue, by the way. All fruit of the vine. Because what happens when it tries to expand and stretch again, it will burst the bottles, and you lost the wine, you lost the bottle. They took those used wine skins and did what with them? They poured them half full of water and poured some wine in them to purify the water. The alcohol would purify the water. That's what they drank all the time. That's what they drank. Now, I did drink out of Jacob's well over there. I took a drink out of Jacob's well. That was quite an experience, too. That well's deep. But they drink wine. But a pastor is not supposed to be a wino. He's not supposed to be an alcoholic. One that stays beside the wine bottle. That's what it means. Tipping all the time, tipping. Tipping the bottle. Not a plaketain. Not a plagiarist. Not a pugilist. Not a brawler. Not a violent person. Not a brawler. A preacher isn't supposed to just sit there and let people beat him up. I remember a long time ago there was a story about a very famous evangelist, Billy Graham. Somebody came up on his front porch where him and his wife was sitting out there, and they called the police because Billy Graham had knocked him out. He attacked them, and he knocked him out. Was there anything wrong with that? No. He was defending himself. He knocked him down. Not a striker, but epiakane. Holding up. Forbearing. Holding up under the strain, you know. Amoxone. Not a fighter with fists or weapons or swords. Not a fighter with fists, weapons, or swords. And then we have another word. Athilargyron. Not for love of money. Not for love of money. Well, most real Baptist preachers are poor. They've usually spent their whole living preaching. The sad thing about it is they run from church to church 5 years here and 5 years there and 5 years here and 5 years there. And they're supporting themselves. I have said this, and I've heard other preachers say this. I'd pay a church if they'd let me preach. I'd pay a church. I'd pay them if they'd let me preach. And so many of them are. Because they're called of God, aren't they? If you're called of God, you've got to do that. Do it, period. Not for love of money. Not for love of money. Well, you know, that was a really, when they start asking for money all the time, you know, supporting a ministry is necessary. Our website, we actually have three websites. If you look over there on the little ratings over there, you'll see it was extremely heavy traffic, the heaviest traffic since the history in 20 years, this last month. It costs a lot of money to keep that thing out there. You know, this. A month. See, I pay to preach. Last month was about $1,300 I paid to preach. That much. That's a lot of money to pay to preach. not to get paid. I did have some help, which it didn't all come out of my own pocket, but that's what would have come out of my own pocket. It was still heavy. Still cost me to preach last month. But you do that. Livingston went to Africa. Remember, you know, Dr. Livingston, I presume, you know, you used to hear that all the time, Stanley looking for Dr. Livingston. They made comedies or cartoons and stuff about that, everything else. They go over there. Well, that really happened. Dr. Livingston went to Africa, and you know what Africa was? What was the greatest religious, denomination there? You know what it was at that time?
Muslim.
Yeah, Muslim. They conquered them, you know. By the way, there are 48 nations in the world today that are Muslim, the highest today. 48 nations in the world that have, and some of them actually a couple of them have 100% Muslim only, because Muslims don't let anybody else come around. They'll kill you. But anyway, he was out there, and when people read the Quran, they read the Quran from the back to the front, as we look at it. And what's the last book in the book of the Bible? Revelation. All right? And he got a book translated after many years of being over there. His first convert was a woman. And he got a Bible to her that she could read, and she read the book of Revelation first. And guess what she found out? In the Hadith and in the Quran and the Sunnahs, it tells us that in the end times, the Mahdi is coming back, which is going to be an impersonation, absolutely a reincarnation of Muhammad. Okay? There's going to be the Christ is going to come back. He's going to kill all. Jesus is going to come back, and he's going to kill all the Jews, and then he's going to kill all of the Christians. And what else? The beast is going to come out of Arabia, out of the desert, and he's going to mark all of the true Muslims on the forehead, on the hand, with a mark. And, of course, now, you know that Muslims are already wearing that. It means there is no God but Allah, and he has no companions, no Jesus. And Muhammad is his prophet. Now, that's what's going to happen, according to the Quran and the Hadith. When the woman read the book of Revelation, she found out there's going to be an Antichrist. There's going to be a false prophet, and there's going to be a beast, and the beast is going to mark everybody with a mark of the Antichrist. It just terrorized her. She realized that I've been on the wrong side all this time. So she was converted. Now, your ministry is not measured by how many converts you had. Probably, as an evangelist, Billy Graham has probably seen more people saved in the history of preachers than anybody since St. Patrick, probably, or more. But Patrick built churches, real churches, in real places. Building churches. That's the real number one thing. The same people saved, that's real important too. But building churches that are sound, that can carry on the gospel. Do you know Jesse James in history? Jesse James was an outlaw, wasn't he? He was a Baptist. He was a Baptist that was pushed into the Civil War, and his family was terrorized by the North. He joined Quantrell's Raiders, what they call Quantrell's Raiders. The Daltons and the Youngers did also, because their families were so terrorized. The Youngers were Northern sympathizers, but they killed the father. They stole and they robbed 7 ranches, and so they went to the South. They went to the South. If you read history, you will find out that Jesse James and Frank James were really bad guys. But if you study church history and Baptist history, you'll find that they were Robin Hood. Going from one church to another, and the churches were protecting them. Jesse and Frank went to one church one time where Benjamin Marcus Bogard's father was a deacon. And they took Jesse and Frank home to their house. And Jesse James slept in the bed with Ben Bogard, because that's what you did back then. You just shared beds, whatever. And he said he kept that big pistol on his belly all night long. And Jesse James wanted to go out and become a Robin Hood. Not Jesse James, but Ben Bogard. And his father wisely took him to a hanging, where this man had raped a woman and killed her husband. A double, twice guilty of a death penalty. And he admitted it. He got up there, and he's a great big guy. I can't remember his name or what year it was right now, but I can tell you that it's in The Life and Times of Benjamin Marcus Bogard, Volume 1. Tells you all about this. Tells you about being in bed with Jesse James and all that. He idolized him because this man was going and setting things right. Jesse would go and he'd rob banks and trains. Most of these banks were owned by these people that had ripped off his family, the Youngers especially. Now, Youngers and James never robbed banks together. I don't care what history tells you and stories and things. They never did that. But they would take, and where these banks were going to foreclose on some poor farmer's land, they'd pay off the loan. And then, way back there in 1880-something, I think it was, Jesse James faked his own death. He shot his cousin, which was named Jeremiah Jesse James. They shot him, and that's one that all of this, and they did the history thing here a while back, which was bogus anyway. Had two bullets in him. A lot more bullets in him than that. They were 32 caliber bullets. Ford was supposed to shot him. Bob Ford was supposed to shot him with a 44. And it went through his head and came out in the wall. But the coroner's report said he was shot with a 38 caliber ball. An 1851 Colt Navy. Not a 44. And they suppressed the coroner's report and everything else. They really were in control. He was alive until 1930-something. Covered up. Still supporting churches. His father built 5 missionary Baptist churches that are still in existence to this day. Still in existence to this day. Three and verse 4. Tu ideon oidon kalos. Pro ista menon, techna, ekonta, and hypotage, meta passes, sam no tetos. Of these own house well ruling, they've got good standing in the community. Here you go, Brother Roger. He's going to get the wives in a little while. He's getting children right now. Now he's going to go, Paul's going to go after the children. Now this is PK, preacher's children, all right? Of his own house, ruling, having a good standing. It's present, or it's a present participle middle voice, accusative singular masculine. He's ruling his own children, his household, well. He's doing it. And children having in subjection and all dignity. And all dignity. I know of a church that excluded their pastor and vacated the pulpit because he had a 25-year-old daughter that was mentally ill. And that she was living a promiscuous life. Yet he was living her home because he could not turn her out on the public. He couldn't let her go. It was better, safer for him to keep her there because she was not all there. And the church decided one day that that he wasn't doing a good job with his home since he couldn't control his daughter, even though she was handicapped. And they vacated the pulpit and excluded him from church because he was not a good pastor. Well, he wasn't even a good church member if he couldn't keep his family in line, this girl, living in his home, acting like this. Is that right or wrong? That's not what he's talking about, is it? That's stupid. Stupid and what we call, there are people, there are pastors that try to rule over churches and churches that try to rule over, wrangle their pastors. Good pastor for 15 or 20 years there. All of a sudden they just got burrs under their saddle and wanted to get rid of him, and they use that excuse to do it. Children having in subjection with all dignity and gravity and respect. Your children should be not little outlaws. Should they? We're talking about children. When they get to be 18, well, back then, a child was only a child till he's 12 years old. Then he was a man. She was a woman. She might have got married when she was 8 or 10 years old. Muhammad and Abu Bakr, their advice to all Muslim men was to marry your daughters off before they ever came to adulthood or puberty. Before they did. The Jews wanted their sons to get married by the time they came to puberty so they wouldn't do anything wrong. They'd be married. Okay? You understand that? So their lust would be within marriage. We have 30-year-old children now, 35-year-old children, 40-year-old children, whatever. Sometimes we raise them. Unless they are handicapped, that's not. That's what we've done to ourselves. Isn't it? We've done that to ourselves. They're in verse 5. A, they, tis, tu, idiu, oiku, prostegne, uk, oiden, pos, ecclesias, tu, epimelecete. But since any one of the ones a household to rule not, he knows how the assembly of God, the church of God, he shall care for. If he can't take care of his own household, how in the world is he going to watch over a church? If he can't even watch. Here, God has given him the headship of a home. And if he can't be the head of the home, how in the world is he going to be the head of the church? Now, the pastor is the spiritual leader in the church, isn't he? He's not the boss. That has evolved in Baptist history. What are the Baptist churches where the pastor is the absolute boss and what he says goes? What churches are those? What Baptist churches? Name them. Bible Baptist. There's what we call preacher rule. You have missionary Baptists that wrangle their pastors because they are democracies. And they will, what I'm talking about a while ago, that was Missionary Baptist Church. That happens. There is a happy medium someplace there. A church should very much respect their pastor. If they get mad at him because he's preaching about something they don't like, a lot of times they'll just get rid of him. I'll never forget a joke that I heard one time. Maybe it wasn't a joke. Dr. Hoyt Chastain went to preach a revival back in the South. And he said, now, when he got ready to get up there and preach, before he preached a Bible, the pastor took him into his home and he unpacked all his things. He said, now, I'm going to give you a little some spiritual guidelines here about what you preach about. He said, there are members of our church that play cards. so don't get on card plan. There are members of our church that drink a little bit, so don't talk about teetotaling. There are members of our church that like to go out and dance on Saturday night, so don't talk about dancing. Anyone on down the line, one little thing after the other, and he said, what do you want me to preach about? He said, preach against the Church of Christ. There's none of them there. Not a one of them there. But that's the way it is so many times. Don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, so you just preach that way. You know, I had a woman come up to me here a while back, and she said, you don't preach enough against immorality and sin. I said, well, where I'm in the Bible right now, it's not talking about that. Wait till I get there. A little while later, she left because it got too hard. Because that's where we were when we got there. We got to there, and it got real hard when we started talking about the sins. I think it was Romans, the first chapter. It's real hard, isn't it? Real hard. Yeah. It really is particular, isn't it? It's real particular. I just preach the Bible. That way I don't have to worry about anything. You just preach what the subject is and just go from there. Let the Lord take care of it. Preach His messages. When you go to Acts, the 7th chapter, anybody can preach Stephen's message. That's one of the easiest sermons in this world to preach. I like to preach the Bible. So that's basically what I do. I use a lot of illustrations in between it, but preach the Word. That's what does it. You can illustrate all you want to. It'll pique people's attention or whatever. And Paul did that, and so did Peter and all the others. All the rabbis did the same thing. 3 and verse 6. May, no phaeton. Hina, may, tifothes, ace, krima, empese, tu diabolu. Boy, this is something here. This is quite a little verse. I've heard preachers preach this in the seminary. Boy, we got a lot of stuff in the chapel and the seminary. We got this Timothy, the 3rd chapter, a lot of times. We didn't get it enough. I can tell you that much. We didn't get it enough. You couldn't preach this too much. Because we need it all the time. Church members always look up to the pastors. But you know what? That's what they're supposed to be like too. That's what you're supposed to be like too. How you look at your pastor and the pastor's kids and everything else, that's what you're supposed to be like. That's the way you look at them. I remember Dr. Martin Canavan went up to Visalia. He was preaching in Visalia at that time. And one of the wonderful ladies in the church, her husband was a lost man. And she stuck by him, but he was a drunkard and a gambler and everything else. And he just hated the church. He hated it. You know, all those people in the church are what? All those people in the church are what?
Hypocrites.
That's right, hypocrites. And he used to tell his wife he wouldn't go to church with that bunch of hypocrites. And he'd get out there, and Martin Canavan was broadcasting his messages on the radio. And that old boy got to get out there and listen to him, and he had this piece of ground out there they had to drag to keep the tumbleweeds down. He dragged this thing behind this old Ford pickup, and a Ford pickup had a radio in it. He's out there dragging that thing and dragging. He said there was nothing to drag, but he's out there dragging it, listening to him on the radio. Finally, one day, he wouldn't go to church. When he left, his wife left to go to church that morning. He was out there dragging that piece of property down, listening to Martin Canavan on the church, on the radio. His wife went to church, and after Sunday school, Martin Canavan was just about to get up and preach, and the church doors busted open, and this old boy ran down the aisle and hit the mourner's bench, wanting to get saved. And before he preached, so he went down there and prayed with him, and he got up there, and he said the most foolish thing that I ever heard. He asked me, he said, now what am I supposed to do? And he said, just do exactly what you said these church's members were not doing wrong. You do it right. You know what you're supposed to do. Do what you said they're supposed to do. And read your Bible. And you know what God did to that man? He called him to preach. Isn't that a joke? He called that old boy to preach. And he preached and he preached and he preached. And he got drowned up there in Lake Isabella one time fishing. He drowned up there. But he preached. God does some miraculous funny things, doesn't he? That guy that wouldn't go to church with those hypocrites became a pastor. Yeah. Not a new convert. Newly planted. That's what it says. Newly planted. The only time this word is used here in the New Testament. Newly planted. Newly planted. What's that mean? Not a new convert. You know, sometimes new converts get a call to preach. But they ought to be around just a little while before they go ahead and start pastoring, because they need to see some things. They need to get seasoned just a little bit. New converts, you need to stay in church probably 5 to 10 years at least before you're capable of pastoring a church. Not a new convert, newly planted. In order that not, having been puffed up unto judgment. Having been puffed up. A young preacher, I remember being a member of a church one time, and they had this young preacher right out of the seminary, and this was what he was. He was a new planted and puffed up. I followed him tenaciously. But that was the most arrogant person. You know, he wouldn't even check the oil in his car. He'd call one of his church members, come and check the oil in my car. He wouldn't go in there and fix anything in the church house, do nothing. This pointing and you do it, you do it, you do it, you do it. Well, he didn't last long. I think he was called. I think he called himself. This 4 or 5 years and he was finished. Having puffed up into judgment, he may fall in judgment of the devil. The destroyer, the slanderer will take over in his life. He's too proud. And the Lord hates pride, doesn't it? Does the Lord hate pride? What is the greatest attribute of Satan? Pride. 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 Pride is the number one attribute of Satan. And it can be the number one attribute of a pastor in his downfall is his pride. Pride and arrogance. In the Muslim faith, they say God is the most proud one. That's what they say. They use one of the attributes of Satan as for Allah. The most proud one. What do they say right in the beginning of the Muslim call? God is great. Allah Akbar. God is great. God is greater. God is prouder. Means proud. God is proud. Not God is proud. God was humble enough to come into this world and humiliate himself with mankind, wasn't he? Do you see the great differences between that? It says a pastor shouldn't be a new convert and arrogant. That will be his downfall. He won't last very long. It'll be over with. 3 and verse 7 now. 3 and verse 7. Day. Two different kinds of day, huh? Kai, matirion, kalain, ekain, apu, tu, exothen, hina, me, ace, oi, ne, desmon, em, pese, kai, pa, gida, tu, diabolu. And it is by, or moreover, that little weak adversative conjunctive particle there, page 85. See that day there, delta epsilon? That's where it actually starts. And then it goes back to delta epsilon iota. It is bindingly necessary. Moreover, it is bindingly necessary also a witness good to have from the outside. Now, I think at times a converted outlaw will have a tremendous attraction. Isn't it right? A converted outlaw. Do you know that that Cole Younger was a preacher? Now, he always was. His family were always Baptists. They always preached. But when he got out of prison, he went around to churches and he was preaching. Preaching, preaching, preaching. And people would go to hear him. I think that my stepfather, Dale Remling, would have been a great preacher. Well, probably one of them televangelist type person. I guarantee you one thing, if he was here today, he could tell me how to raise money for the discovertheword.com to keep it on the air. But outlaws sometimes have quite an attraction to people. How about the woman there in John the 4th chapter? That little hussy that came to Jesus and was born again. She went back to the town, and I'm going to tell you something. There could have been 15 or 20 rabbis go back to that town and try to get those people to come out and speak to Jesus, but that one woman had the whole town flooding out because she was ungodly. And all of a sudden, she's got religion. Says, what in the world got a hold of you? What? Something must have happened there at that well. So they just flooded out to him, and many were converted because of her. But a pastor, it says, should have a good witness outside. In other words, in his life. He should be not a crook, a thief. He shouldn't be a used car salesman today. Now, I was a used car salesman, but it didn't do very well. You know what I'd do? I worked for my uncles, and people would come into those car lots. There were three of them had cars. Car lots, and I'd work for all three of those uncles. People would come in there, and first of all, when you go to a used car lot, what do you expect back in those days in the 50s and 60s? What would you expect? To get ripped off. So whatever they tell you, don't believe it. They'd go in there and they say, I want a good car, and I said, that car right over there is the one you need. What about this one over here? And I said, well, that's got a little bit of problem. I want that one. They wouldn't take my advice because I'm the mechanic. And I know which one's the best car. I wasn't very good at it. I wasn't very convincing, I guess. Because I tried to sell them the car that they needed. Now, I've got a friend right now up in Reno that did one in the used car salesman, and the people just loved him because he was telling them the truth and making people happy. It's a different time, I guess. To have from the outside a good witness in order that not to a reproach, ane desmon, a reproach, he may fall in. And a pakida, what's a pakida? A pakida, that's a trap. What kind of trap? What kind of traps are there? Brother Roger, over there in Vietnam, what kind of traps they have over there?
The pit with punji stakes was pretty bad.
Yeah, the pit with the sharpened stakes, they fall into this pit and you're impaled all over the place. The movie Hidalgo. By the way, I'm related to that guy in the movie Hidalgo, the real person. Over there, they put a sand pit out there in the desert with these sharpened stakes in it. What else?
Trip wires.
That had explosives and sometimes just something to stab you to death or poison you. This is the darts of the devil. These are all the darts of the devil, okay? A bird trap. Used to get out when I was a kid, I'd get a cardboard box, pasteboard box, put it up on one end with a little old piece of stick, tie a rope, or not rope, but a cord to it, and get over here behind a building and put bird food down there. Ever done this, Cindy?
Not with birds.
Not with birds. Anyway, here's the ground like this, see? And a bird gets underneath there eating the feed, and then you pull this thing and you got the bird. Then you reach underneath there with your hand and get the bird. There are bird nets, whatever. But that's what it's talking about here, a bird trap, a trap stick. The snare of the devil. All right. Christian people in churches should be honest, just like their pastors should be honest. I know a man that lived up there in Nevada, near Nevada where I lived, and one of the prominent members of the church over there, and are prominent church people in Fish Lake Valley. He had a real big hog that he didn't want to kill. It was a real big hog. And they told him that they'd go kill the hog, and they'd bring half the food, half the meat to him, have it packed and everything. Come back and brought one roast to him. That was it. These were religious people. And now these were not religious people. They were religious, but they were of another religion. These people that represented the truth over there, supposedly. And then one time, he had a boy that was mentally challenged, autistic, and he wanted to get a pony for that boy to ride. And so from this same family now, they sold him a lame horse that had problems for this boy. They knew it was lame, knew it had problems. Is that a good witness? No. But that's the witness that we hold up for the pastors, and that's a witness that every church member should have. You should be honest people. Honest people. Now we come to the 3 and verse 8, the qualifications of a diaconia. Diaconia. What does a diaconia mean? Pamela, what's diaconia mean?
Deacon.
Yeah, that's deacon, all right. What does it do? You remember that, brother? David?
Stir up the dirt.
Stir up dust. He's a worker. He's working in church. He's cleaning the church house. He's doing all kinds of stuff. He's working in church. He's visiting people in the hospital. He's doing all the things that he's supposed to be doing as a deacon. And the church ordains him as a deacon. Now, this is an ordained deacon. Deacon. Okay. An ordained deacon. Many people in a church can do the work of a deacon. Women can do the work of a deacon, the work of a deacon, but only men are qualified to be ordained deacons, not women. Children can be deacons, shouldn't they? Should they? Do they have children ever come and help around the church? They do everything. They go on mission trips. Whatever, they preach. They can do the work of the deacon. Deacons. Diaconus hosatus. Same nous, me di logus, me oino, polu, pros ekontas, me eis crocare deis. Deacons, in a similar manner, or likewise, should be honorable, grave, and serious. They should have dignity. Not double-tongued, not two-faced. You know what a two-faced man is? You go one person, they talk about you, and then he goes the next up and talk about you, the other guy. Not in wine too much. It didn't say he's not supposed to drink wine. No. He's not supposed to be an alcoholic. Again, he's not an alcoholic. He's not a wino. He's not an alcoholic. Holding on to being addicted to wine. That's alcoholic. And not fond of what? Not a lover of money. Not a lover of money. Base gain. Base gain. Not a lover of base things. Ungodly habits. Fame and fortune. Not a lover of base gain. 3 and verse 9. Ekontas to mysterion tes pisties in kathara sin edese. Having the witness of faith in a clean conscience. In other words, this deacon has got the same qualifications as the pastor over there, doesn't it? Same qualifications as the pastor. Let's do number 10, and then I'll turn you loose on the world. Kai hutoi de dokimazestosan Proton, eta, diakonetoson, anegkletoi, ontes. Also these, moreover, also these ones, let be proved or tested. First, let them be deacons. Let them be a deacon. It was a practice in the 1920s, 10s, 1880s, 1890s, 1910s, 20s, 30s, that when you got somebody saved in the church and they were gung-ho, you just ordained them right off as a deacon and start letting them teach Sunday school and all of that to keep them in church. If you give them a responsibility, you're going to keep them there. You're going to make them feel obligated to do all these things. That's not what this says, is it? What happened there? Lots of problems. Let be proved and tested. Let them be tested first. Then let them deek. Let them deek. Let them do the work of a minister. Let them be deacons. Let them deek. One's irreproachable being. One's not able to be captured any bad habits or bad things. Now verse 3:11. We'll do that one. See that? We can't finish it till we get to verse 3:11. Gynekes hosiatus semnos me diabolus nephalios pistos and pasin. All right. Women, similar, let be serious and grave, dignified, modest, spiritually in order, not devils. Sober ones, faithful in all things. Now, if you'll take many commentaries, they're going to say these are deaconesses. This is not deaconess right here. This is a deacon and a pastor's wives. We talked about the children a while ago. Now we're going to talk about the deacons and the pastor's wives. This is the wives. This is the wives. The deacons' wives. This is not deaconesses. This is where a lot of churches will ordain women deacons from this very verse right here. But that's not what it's talking about. We talked about the pastors. We talked about the pastor's children. We talked about the deacons. And all of the same requirements for the deacon is the same requirements for the pastors, aren't they? Same thing. Now we have the pastor's wives. Pastor's wives, and likewise, in like manner, in this little adverb here, hosiatus. Let them be serious, dignified, modest, spiritually in touch, not devils. Have you ever seen a deacon's wife that's a devil? How about a pastor's wife that's a devil? I've known some. I've known some rascals. Devils. That's slanderers. Slanderers. Nephalius. Sober ones. That means temperate. Temperate ones. Faithful ones. In all things. A wife can either make or break a deacon, and a wife can either make or break a preacher. And that's happened. Preacher could be the greatest preacher that ever was. But if his wife can destroy his life. A deacon can be the greatest deacon that ever was. But his wife can destroy his life. Now, let's go on verse 12. This is very important. 1 Timothy 3:12. Diakonoi, eistoson, mias, genekos, Andres, technon, kalos, proestamenoi, kai ton idion oikon. All right. Now, the deacon. What is a deacon supposed to be? The same qualification for a deacon is for a pastor. Deacons, let them continue to be one women men. So what is a deacon? Is he a man or a woman? He's a man. Can a woman be a good deacon? A woman can deke. A woman should be a good deacon, dust kicker, somebody working in the church and stuff like that. But a woman is not qualified to be a ordained deacon. Now we're talking about the word deacon. We could go, I think, at page 91 and 92 in this little book here, if I remember right. Let's see if I did that. Let's see how good my memory is. Probably failed me, huh? 91 and 92. Oh, let's see here. No, it didn't fail me. Diakonos, one who renders service to another. An attendant, a servant. One who executes a commission. That is an ordained deacon. One who executes a commission. A deputy, a deputized, that is an ordained deacon. A commissioner, a minister, a preacher of the gospel. Are these all the words deacon? Yes, it is. A minister charged with a sentence or a commission. A minister charged with a significant characteristic. A servitor, a devoted follower, a deacon, or a deaconess. The work of a deacon or a deaconess. The work of a deacon, anyone can do, and a deaconess. A woman can deke, but not be ordained. A woman ought to deke. A woman ought to work, shouldn't she? It goes on that one who has an official duty to superintend in church capacity, that is what? That's an ordained deacon. An ordained deacon can preach. An ordained deacon can baptize people. And literally, an ordained deacon could... Now, this is legally, which has nothing to do with the Lord, but literally... An ordained deacon can officiate at a marriage. All of the things that a pastor can do, a deacon can also do. That's on page 91 and 92 in the Analytical Greek Lexicon. Deacons, let them be of one woman men, of children good, ruling, standing in front of and over, and the ones in his own house. Those are the ones put in their own house. There was an old term a long time ago. I'll leave you with this tonight. You know what a copperhead is? You know what a copperhead is? What is a copperhead, brother?
It's a mean snake.
That's a mean snake. People used to call a worthless deacon a copperhead deacon. You know what a copperhead deacon is? Someone who just puts pennies in the offering. Just pennies in the offering. A deacon should be a leader in the church in all ways, and so should the pastors. They should be the best givers and the best workers in the church. A pastor and a deacon should lead out as workers and servants in the church. Thank you for your attention tonight. God bless you. Father, thank you for your word tonight. Thank you for the instructions on how to behave ourselves in the house of God. Forgive us where we fail you. Help us to be better servants, to be deacons and deaconesses, to be preachers and preacheresses as we go wherever we go. Help us to minister to those.